This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk, and today we have a very special guest. Her name is Alethea Burke. It's a very unusual name. We have to ask her about that. And her new book is called The X, a novel. It's a really blue cover here, very blue. Is blue a color for you?
I actually do like that color of blue, but I have nothing to do with the outsides of the jacket, so I can say that I think they did an excellent job since I had nothing to do with it.
Do they consult you? Do they show it to you at all?
Yeah, they show it to me in advance, and I usually just go with what the experts say. But on that one in particular, I really did love it.
And they're actually distributing keychains with the book too. And when I got the book in the mail, I must say it was provided by HarperCollins. And when I got it in the mail, I felt this thing clinking on the floor. I'm like, what is that?
That was actually my idea. I suggested that, and they managed to find a keychain that looks exactly like the one on the cover of the book.
Well, like, what did I just drop? Oh, maybe there's money in here, you know?
So are you using it? Are you carrying around your propaganda? Yeah.
Yes,
see, it worked. Now someone will ask you, what's up with your keychain, and maybe you will sell a book or two for me.
That's right. Who's Alethea Burke? That's an interesting name. You know? And what does that name mean?
It was my great-grandmother's name, so it's kind of a family name, and I think in the United States it was more common in the 1800s. I think in the McCoy, or the Hatfield-McCoy feud, the girl was named Alethea.
Now, do people have a nickname for you, or
no.
they just say the full name?
If I order a pizza or something, I'll say Allie, but even then they'll ask me how to spell Allie, so I haven't really, I don't know why it matters, but
yeah, it could be
a pizza guy.
It could be a number of different things. I must say, this book, and we talked about this before we started here, but this book haunts me, and it still haunts me when I think about it, and you know why, but we can't tell people why, and how's that to get people to read the book now?
Right. We can't actually talk about the book because then you would know everything. To the extent you observe that, I don't think it gives anything away to say that I think fundamentally the plot of the book is one of those plots where instead of it's, oh, there's a bad guy who does bad things because he was just born bad in his blood, it's a book that talks about little mistakes and the consequences of those mistakes down the road. So, somebody makes one bad decision or tells one lie or keeps one secret, and over the course of years, you know, that triggers, it's kind of picking a little fork in the road and how that one decision steers the course of not only that one person's life, but other people's. And I think that says nothing about the plot in terms of spoilers, but I think it might be why it haunts you a little bit. Sort of, oh, if that one thing didn't happen, maybe everything could have been different.
Yeah, but there's more to it than that, but once again, we can't talk about it. This is a book we can talk about in a general way, but it's very difficult to talk about specifics without giving something away, which is the most frustrating thing about doing interviews. You can't talk about things you want to talk about.
Just want to say it's good.
I mean, it's one of those books that you would love to read in a book club and talk about, but everybody would have to read the book beforehand.
Right, yeah.
Absolutely. Can't spoil it for anybody because it would be a shame to spoil the book. Now, this is not autobiographical at all. You didn't have an ex like this or an ex that was nuts like this.
No, not nutty at least. But I think for the plot of the book, which doesn't give anything away, is the main character, I guess it's really two main characters, but Olivia Randall is a criminal defense lawyer in Manhattan, and she gets a phone call one morning from a teenage girl saying, you've got to help my father. My father, I think he's been arrested. It turns out that guy is her ex-fiance that she hasn't seen for 20 years. She winds up deciding to help him for reasons you find out about. And he's been arrested for a triple homicide that she's just convinced he couldn't have done, and she's convinced because she's sure she knows him. And the premise of the book isn't, luckily it's not autobiographical in that I don't have a potential killer as an ex in my background, but I do think most people have somebody from their past that used to mean a lot to them and is now a stranger. And, you know, it's the person that sometimes you Google for reasons you don't even understand, or you look at their Facebook page, and it's this kind of surreal feeling of, oh, that person's still out there, and maybe you have some regrets about how you treated them or regrets about how things ended. And I think that's somewhat of a universal experience. But for Olivia, he's coming back into her life in this kind of big, shocking way, and she starts out assuming he has to be innocent because she thinks she knows him. But, you know, after 20 years, how well do you really know a person?
And how well do we know people in general? I mean, we think we know people, and then we hear, we all thought we knew Bill Cosby, but obviously we didn't. There was more to him than we thought. Or is there? Who knows? I mean, you ask yourself these questions, you think, how could somebody that we've known and loved for so many years do something like that?
Right, there's this whole other side to that person,
And it's such a horrifying, we refuse to accept it at first. We think, well, no, that's not the person I remember. That's not who I remember when I was growing up.
Right. Everybody's kind of got these external persona that they carry around, and then they can turn around and do something quite different when they're alone.
Now, the last book I read of yours was called Long Gone, which I thought was good, but I think this book is outstanding.
Thank you.
And I always hate to say that to authors, because I'm afraid they're going to say, well, why didn't you like my other book? Yeah. But you never know how an author's going to react to a comment like that. But it's a feeling, and I guess all fans have feelings like that. This is the book of yours that I'm going to remember for a long time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And did you work harder on this one than you ever have before on books?
I worked in a different way, I would say. I think some people would like Long Gone more because it's a more sprawling, adventurous plot. You know, she's kind of on the run and big shocking things happen from scene to scene. This one is really, you know, it's all confined in a relatively short amount of time other than one.
Yeah, I find myself being annoyed with every character.
But I think a lot of the work of the book and the suspense of the book is in characterization. And I do think I've worked specifically on that.
And I was just going to say, I think I found myself being annoyed with every single character in this book at some point or another.
Yeah, me too.
It's like, why are you doing that? And even Olivia, in the very beginning, there's a scene in her apartment, and I thought, no way, Olivia, no way. I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, she does some fairly awful things, and I think it becomes clear to the reader why she really only has one friend.
But
this one friend who's there for her through thick and thin, and other than that, I think it's a horrible writers quote their own dialogue and pat themselves on the back, but one of my favorite moments is when she tells her law partner that she's going to represent Jack, which she thinks is a terrible mistake. Mm-hmm. And she says, I just have a feeling. And he says, dear girl, you choose today of all days to suddenly have feelings.
I think for some reason, when I was reading this book, I was thinking of Archie Bunker on All in the Family. And the reason I was thinking about him is because I kind of relate him to Jack, because everybody hated Archie Bunker at one point because he was such a nasty guy, and yet we could see underneath that there was a heart there somewhere. There was something more to him than just that loudmouth, opinionated, I don't know what you'd call him. I don't even know what word you would use for Archie Bunker. But
blowhard.
Yeah. But I mean, there's more to people than we think there are.
Sometimes, that's a funny comparison.
But we don't always want to get underneath whatever that nasty part is. We think, well, that's just who they are. They're just a nasty person. We never get to the underneath of it. And that's sort of like what Jack is.
Well, that's interesting that that's your take on him. I think I did my job well then, because I wanted him to seem like a blank slate to the reader, that he could be anything. And that's why Olivia spends the whole book wondering, you know, did he or didn't he do it, is you look at him from one angle and he seems like this guy who's just full of bad luck. You know, his parents died one by one, and then his brother to follow, and then we find out Olivia did some terrible things to him, and somehow it's all connected. And then you look at him from another angle, and he seems kind of like he uses that to manipulate people, that he's always the, I'm the naive guy, and everybody has to take care of me, and I'm kind of entitled. So that's an interesting take on him.
But what would it do to a person who would be in Jack's position? I mean, all those things that happened to him, I mean, what would that do to a person? You can only imagine.
Well, that's what she starts to ask herself, yeah. Is, you know, maybe he was a good guy.
And how do you...
Maybe he's still a good guy. Maybe he was a good guy then and no longer is. Or maybe he was bad the whole time, and that's why so much... writing the book in first person was important, because it's all about her perception.
I think you're really growing really well as a writer. And
well, I thank you.
I'm very impressed by that. And, you know, when you see, there's so many writers out there today, and you think, you read them and you think, well, this one's okay, but this one really got to me. And I didn't know it was going to get to me at first. I really didn't.
That blue cover caught you off guard. He thought it was going to be all light and fluffy.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be, well, no, not a romance novel. And and people out there are saying, well, is he attacking romance novels? You know, they're just not for me, like, as much as I'd want them to be. It depends on what the romance is. It depends on how deep the romance goes. I think of a movie like Somewhere in Time that movie really got to me, but because of the romance. But it all depends on the story for me.
I think we said before you started recording, it's almost the anti-romance novel. You better not fall in love, because it might come back to haunt you.
And it's more of a thriller and a mystery. I don't know which it is. I think it's more of a mystery than a thriller. I don't know. You could debate it all night, probably.
I still don't understand the difference between the two. I always feel like my books are both, but I guess if some people say a thriller, there is no mystery, but I disagree with that. I think Hapless Child's books have mystery.
Well, you look at a movie like Jagged Edge, and that was a thriller all through it, and yet it's still a mystery. So maybe movies are different than books. I don't know.
I love it that you brought up Jagged Edge, because, you know, I have a film agent, as all writers do, and it means that nothing ever gets done, but, you know, you can sit there and think about it. But I was talking to the film agent, he was like, so what would be comparable movies? And I was like, Jagged Edge. I love that movie, Jagged Edge. He goes, you realize nobody making films remembers Jagged Edge.
I remember.
It made me feel old, and it made me feel sad for Hollywood. I'm like, that movie is so good.
And, I mean, Jeff Bridges was gorgeous in that movie. I mean, he's
yeah,
just a young,
so great.
Really
yeah.
young, I mean, anyway, we can talk about movies all night.
Yeah. But that final twist, you know, is just so delicious. Like, I loved it.
But when you first think of this idea, when this idea first came into your head, how long was it before you started writing the book?
It took me a really long time. Because, so Jack is accused of a triple homicide. And he says he had to have been framed. Olivia thinks he was framed, and the way he got framed, if he was indeed framed, was he was going to a missed moment meeting. So a missed moment is when someone sees someone on the 6 train but regrets later not talking to them, and then they go on the internet and say, I saw you on the 6 train, let's find each other and meet now. So he has this missed moment where he sees this woman at the Christopher Street Pier in the early morning. He's on his early morning jog. She's got last night's party dress on and is drinking champagne out of the bottle, reading a book in the grass. And he tells his friend, you know, I saw this woman and it got me thinking maybe I'm ready to date again. His wife was killed a few years earlier, which is involved in the plot. Mm-hmm. But she finds him, the friend, finds this woman in the grass, and he starts exchanging emails with her. Her name's Madeline. He goes to the waterfront to go meet Madeline, and that's when shots are fired. And he's left kind of holding the proverbial bag, and he looks like he's the shooter. And the question is, why would someone frame him? That was the idea that came to me first, was the idea of using a missed moment ad to frame someone for murder. And a lot of times my books start with a character first, but this one actually just started with that little tiny concept. And I thought of it potentially as an Ellie Hatcher book, who's my series character. Mm-hmm. And for various reasons, it wouldn't have been a good story, you know, told from the perspective of a police officer that needed to be closer to the person who had everything at stake. And I kind of just played with different scenarios, and it turned into this idea of the main character not being Jack, but the main character really being Olivia, the person who tries to help the person being framed.
I think that's fascinating that you knew it couldn't be an L.A. Hatcher novel. I think you know your character so well, you know what would fit into the story.
And because it would never be about her, right? And she wouldn't really even be trying to help the person. She would probably be trying to prove they weren't framed, you know, so it would have changed the book a lot. Mm-hmm. And an Ellie book really needs to be about Ellie, and there was no personal connection for her, so I set that aside fairly quickly. But then the harder decision then is, if it's not an Ellie book, what is it? Which is what makes standalones hard.
And so this is the first book we've met Olivia Randall then. Do you plan on her being a series character now? Or is that up in the air?
I think that's up in the air. You know, I don't plan. I wish I planned everything better than I did, but I'm working on an Ellie Hatcher book now. I think what's interesting is that, you know, Olivia is in New York. Super careful readers who geek out on my books will notice that there are some names that are the same, and Olivia lives in Ellie Hatcher's New York, and so there's potential there. It could wind up being, you know, not to compare myself to Michael Connelly, but if he's got Harry Bosch and Mickey Haller, maybe I have Olivia and Ellie. We'll see.
Well, Ellie's got five.
I don't think they'd like each other, which could be really interesting.
Well, Ellie's got five books already, right?
Yeah, working on the sixth now.
How do people respond to Ellie as opposed to, have you gotten emails about Olivia already? And how do people like the fact you have a new character?
I get a lot of love Olivia, want to see her again, but the same people will also say can't wait to read the next Ellie. So, you know, I wish I were one of those people who would write three books a year, but I'm not.
Maybe you need to talk to Nora Roberts.
You know, just as a matter of logistics, it's not like, you know, Ellie is not a huge number one best-selling series. So the question is, you know, if you're trying to build a series, how long can you really take between books? So I feel like at least every other book needs to be an Ellie book. So that's what I'm working on now.
And that's what Jeffrey Deaver does, too. Every other one of his books is like a Lincoln Rhyme. So I guess there's something to that. You want to try something different.
Yeah.
That way you get both sides of the fence. You get to think of something, you know, create something new, and also go back to the old familiar.
And you don't forget your series character. Like, you still have to kind of, you don't want to get so far away from it that you can't occupy that brain again.
And there are writers out there who can write two books at once, and I always think, how in the world wouldn't you get confused doing that?
I'm trying to do that now. We'll see if it works or not, because I co-author a series with Mary Higgins Clark.
Yeah, how did that come about? Let's talk about that.
She had a book called I've Got You Under My Skin, where the main, or it wasn't really the main character, but a character in it, was the producer of a reality-based TV show that reinvestigates cold cases. She and her publishers saw the potential for a spinoff where that was the premise of the series. And if she was going to start a series, that it's that same problem. If you write a book a year, how do you have both a series and your standalones? And so they decided to see if she might have a co-author for the series so that she could continue to do her own books. And I got picked, which is quite the honor for me. I think
now, did you know her beforehand?
We had met, but, you know, we weren't... We had met, but that was it, you know. But I was incredibly flattered to know that she even knew who I was. And it was a couple of my books. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Almost fainted when I heard that. So I was on a list of people that I think they had come up with to talk to. And once we got together and, you know, I read the book and we talked about a potential series, and it just happened. So we're working on a third book together now. It's really fun.
I saw the title of it. I can't remember what the title is now, but I saw it somewhere on
Yeah, the new one that's out is called All Dressed in White.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I mean the third one. I even saw a title for the third one.
You did?
Yeah, it was on Fantastic
Didn't know that was out yet.
Fiction.com, and I can't remember the title of it now. It's totally lost in me somewhere.
Interesting. But not know that was even out.
Well, this is
good. I'm gonna go look at that.
This is weird because you don't even know.
It might be her book, maybe. I'm not sure, but maybe her solo.
No, it sounded like part of the series, just
okay.
from the title of it. I wish I could tell you what the title is. I'll have to look it up now. But what is that? How do you work on them with her? Do you actually go to her house and write together there, or how does that work?
We usually meet in the city, and then we talk things out a lot. Like, we talk out every part. Like, we talk out every character. We kind of talk out who did it and why. We talk out beginning, middle, end. We talk about red herrings. And then we start passing a draft back and forth. But it's amazing that if how much we can get done, kind of two people in a little bit of a writing room together, because you don't just stop. Like, the problem with me working alone is, let's say I've got the missed moment idea and then it doesn't work as an Ellie book, I might just call it quits for the day and say, okay, I'll pick up again tomorrow. But if you've set aside an entire day to not just keep your heads and your thoughts in your mind, but to speak them out loud to another person, you might say, okay, well, it doesn't work as an Ellie book, but why not? And then you kind of pick up that thread, and the other person can say, well, what if it's from the perspective of Jack? And we can talk about why that may or may not work. And you just get a lot more done than if you're keeping it all up in your head. So given that we talk it through up front, I think it makes the writing go easier.
Right, exactly. But, I mean, to co-authoring, had you ever done that before?
No. Now I want to do it. Now I was talking to some friends of mine who haven't had that experience, and so it's difficult to convince them we should do this, but I want to have, like, weekend retreats where three or four trusted friends go away together and talk through their ideas, like, together. So it wouldn't be co-authoring, but it would be basically that writing room context of somebody almost moot. We call it mooting, you know, in law school. Like, you moot your argument, meaning somebody plays judge and asks you questions and tries to find the weak points. And I like the idea of writers mooting each other on their book ideas. But nobody will do it with me.
Right. I think the title I saw was As Time Goes By, but you're right, that's one of her
books. That's a Mary book, yeah.
That's a Mary book. I don't know why I thought I saw the third book in the series. I was excited, too.
Oh, I see what it is. They've got I've Got You Under My Skin book one in the series.
Maybe.
I think technically the Cinderella Murders book. It depends where you start counting, with the spinoff or with the origin story. So that's why they have three down there.
No, I've read both books, actually, the Cinderella's and As Time Goes By. I enjoyed them both. And I like Lori. I like the fact we're going to see Lori each time. So, see, I'm just hoping her life changes each time we see a book. I like
yeah,
to see
that. Yeah, she's a good character. Yeah, that's going to be one of the really fun things of working with Mary on that is, although she's had recurring characters, I don't think she has had what you would call, you know, a series where you follow this one person, have a little visit with her every year, and she's always in a little, slightly different place, so that's fun.
Now, do you have an idea for another Olivia Randall book yet?
No.
Not yet.
I have two ideas. One idea is the book I'm working on with Mary, and the other one's the Ellie Hatcher book I'm working on, and that's enough for me right now. But
and you can't tell us about either one. That's a shame.
No, I can. The Ellie book's a big book. It's if you've read the series, part of her backstory has to do with her father's death in Wichita, Kansas, when she was a kid. And she goes, we get to see Ellie back in Kansas, so that's fun. You get to meet Ellie's mother.
Now, did you go to Kansas to do research?
I grew up in Kansas.
Oh, you did?
I don't need to go to Kansas.
Oh, you know all about Kansas.
I know about the fictional Wichita I've created in Nellie's backstory because it's where I grew up. One of my sisters still lives there, too, with my niece and nephew and brother-in-law. So
you get to call her and say, give me some information.
Yeah, where's Ellie going to go eat tonight? Yeah.
What's it like in Wichita, Kansas, usually during the year? I mean, is it more warm, cold?
It's extremely seasonal, so the summers are horrendously hot and the winters are brutally cold.
Right.
It's windy all the time. You wouldn't move to Wichita for the weather, let's say. I'm not sure why you would. I shouldn't say that, but it definitely wouldn't be for the weather. No, it's a nice, it's it's a somewhat old-fashioned kind of city that's, for the most part, the economy is driven by, there's an Air Force base there, and then they call themselves the air capital of the world because there's, you know, been Boeing, Cessna, Lear, a lot of the big airplane manufacturers have always had factory jobs there.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, those have died off a little bit, so that's sort of one of Wichita's dynamics.
Yeah, I work for an aircraft company. We've died off a little bit too. It's kind of sad right now.
And
The cheaper gas gets, the worse our business gets, which is really strange. But that's the way it is right now, unfortunately.
Right.
Now you have a very, very famous dad, James Lee Burke.
For a writer, yeah. I mean, there's no such thing as a really famous writer. He's done okay for himself.
Oh, he's done pretty great for himself.
Yeah.
How's he doing?
He's doing great. He lives in Montana now. He's got he does horse rescue. Like, he takes horses nobody else wants. And
oh, really?
They lived with him and my mom out in Montana. Yeah, every day call him, and he spends hours out there with those horses. So he loves it.
Really? And he's still writing, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What is it like to have a father that's famous? I mean, he's pretty famous. Maybe not to you, but to the world.
I mean, like I said, it's not like he's George Clooney or something, but in the writing world, yeah, he's a big figure. You know, he wasn't successful yet when I was growing up, so that was not an aspect of my childhood. You know, mm-hmm. He was out of print, in fact, until I was in college. So his career is actually not something that happened to me as a kid. You know, I was kind of already out of the house and doing my own thing by the time all these great things started to happen for him, which is great for him, but it wasn't really part of my formative years. And then it's great, you know, to be part of a profession with him. You know, I think we're mutually proud of each other, and we can talk to each other about things that other people may not understand, like, you know, this store didn't have enough people on book tour, you know, little things that just come up in a job. You know, it's nice that we sort of have the same job. But mostly I just think of him as my dad, so we don't sit around talking about books constantly.
Now, over the course of writing The X, I mean, how long did it actually take to write once you started writing? I mean, how long, I mean, was it...
It takes me about a year from beginning to end, but I spend a lot of time thinking. Like, you know, sometimes I take too long to start, but, you know, by the time I start, you know, it's maybe 8 months of actual writing, and then you've got the editing process.
You make it sound like something that's a little bit tedious, the editing process.
No, I love the editing process, actually, yeah. I'm the rare writer who actually really appreciates the editing process. Maybe it's because I have a really good editor. But
and you do, and it shows from actually reading the book. You can tell that this is done professionally, because I didn't see one mistake in the whole book, which is great.
Yeah, it's not even just catching those mistakes. I mean, she'll really help identify parts of the book where something drags, or if a character doesn't seem fleshed out enough. I mean, she'll really push me on those big picture things, and as frustrating as it is to hear, it's not quite perfect yet.
Now,
to go back in and make a book better for me is really rewarding.
Right. So you still teach criminal law?
I do. Yeah, I teach at Hofstra Law School in Long Island.
Now, how many days a week do you do that?
It varies a lot. So sometimes, you know, it's not 40 hours a week of classroom time. It's right now I'm only teaching one class. You know, sometimes I teach two, but not more than that.
Right. So would you like to focus full-time on writing? Is that the idea? Or
no, because I could do that. I could, you know, either just take a leave or I could quit. But I got an arrangement now where I only teach one semester going forward and not the other one, so that I can sort of just focus my schedule on fiction writing most of the year. So, yeah, I'm in a pretty lucky position that I can turn off my day job without quitting it.
Now, I want to talk about Charlotte. Charlotte's a very interesting woman. I'm laughing just thinking about
her. I love her, yeah.
She's a little crazy.
I want to hang around her, yeah.
She's kind of one of those characters you think she could have a book of her own. Yeah,
yeah, Charlotte's pretty good. She's a good character. Yeah, so Charlotte is Jack's best friend. she, Olivia, and Jack all went to college together, and it's quite clear early on Olivia, or Charlotte, never approved of Olivia, and probably for good reason. And she's loyal to a fault to Jack, is clearly his best friend, knows a lot about him that Olivia doesn't know, and she's kind of a whack. Yeah, she's a rich kid who started a website that grew into a kind of media phenom, and she lives alone with her little fat pug named Daisy, and she's just kind of a, you know, she's like a storming type of personality. If she wants something, she finds a way to get it. She kind of takes care of business and bosses everybody around, and knows exactly who she is. Yeah, I really like her.
I'm thinking of Maggie Smith on Downton Abbey. You know?
She's a young lesbian Maggie Smith. Yes.
Maggie Smith, I mean, she's just, I'm watching her Sunday night, the episode that was on Sunday night, I'm just amazed by
her. Oh, she's just so fantastic.
When she gets angry, I get excited, you know?
I know, when she does that voice, her angry voice, it's the best.
It's just tremendous, and everybody, and the way people talk about her on the show, it's just hilarious.
Right.
It's like, the woman who must be obeyed, you know?
Sort of like. I still think the best line on Downton Abbey was when she said, "What is a weekend?"
But I mean, the ability to be obnoxious and to be funny at the same time is not easy.
Yeah, so I really like the Charlotte character. She lives in Ellie's Manhattan too, so and her website could be maybe part of a case or something. I'm thinking out loud.
Yeah, I think she could have her own book. I definitely think she could. I mean, she's one of those people you'd love to have lunch with.
She'd be fun. I think our dogs would play together.
But are any of your characters modeled on real people at all? Or anybody you know or anybody you have
really,
known?
Really? It's little traits of people, I would say. The Charlotte character, there is a little homage to one of my readers that I've become friends with is a lawyer, actually, up in Boston, and her name is Charlotte. She's got a different last name, but her first name is Charlotte. And she is a huge dog rescuer, and including pugs. But I've gotten to know her through our mutual love of dogs, and she's, you know, kind of helped me a bit when one of my dogs was sick, and she's also a lawyer,
oh, wow.
And we talk about that kind of stuff. So she's my buddy through Facebook, and that Charlotte is named Charlotte because of her, but the character is not really based on her, just the fact that she likes pugs.
But she must have, when she picked up the book, she must say, "Oh man, she's thinking about me."
She did. She actually she sent me a message saying, "I can't help but notice you have a lesbian who loves pugs named Charlotte." And I said, "Now did I? Huh?"
Well, what a coincidence! You seem like such a happy person. What makes you happy?
My dogs. You know, I like very simple things. I'll tell you the truth. I like going out to dinner. I like cooking for my husband. I like playing with my dogs. I like having a weekend with nothing scheduled. And I like golf.
You like golf?
So I'm pretty bougie. I have to say, there's nothing really complex going on with my interests in life. But yeah, we love to golf. So living in New York is not a place for people who love golf to live. So when we travel, we tend to play. We go, you know, find some cheap hotel in Florida or something and stay there and play golf for a weekend to get away from the cold sometimes.
But that's very unusual for a couple together to love golf. That doesn't happen too often that I've heard about. You know.
Well, I know. I think, unfortunately, I think men have treated the golf course as the place they go to escape from their wives.
Right.
And there is still this. I get prickly on a golf course because you can tell that some men, if they get paired up with us, you know, they're out smoking their cigars and have their cooler full of beer, and like a girl shows up, and you can tell that it's like, ew, a girl on the golf course, and I think they need to grow up. And then I beat them. Then I beat them, and then they really don't like it. But, no, it's something for me and Sean, it's great. You know, we have fun together doing it.
Now, is he right also?
No, he does security management at the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Oh, wow.
So I based a character, my book, If You Were Here.
Right.
The main characters are a former prosecutor who's now a journalist, and her husband, went to West Point and does security management at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And so I just kind of took the characters aren't us, and the plot certainly isn't ours, but I just sort of took our professional attributes and thought, what would happen if we got into an adventure?
So everywhere you go, you're thinking of plots for novels.
I write things down all the time. I can't tell if my friends think it's funny or if they find it irritating, but I'll stop mid-conversation and I'll be like, say what you just said again.
Now, as a prosecutor, do you watch these crime things that happen on TV, like the Bill Cosby thing? Do you follow that? Do you watch that?
Yeah.
I think the OJ series started last night. I didn't happen to catch it, but I mean,
I'm gonna tune into that to see if it's worth watching. My instinct, you know, I've mentioned before having the film and TV agent, and nothing gets made.
Right.
I'm surprised that got made. I don't know what it offers, but I haven't seen it yet.
Well,
the
families,
I'm curious about it.
Yeah, the families are pretty upset. They're afraid the victims are going to be portrayed in a bad manner in some way.
Yeah, I'm confused about why it's being made. And when I've seen pictures of them all kind of made up to look like those, you know, the lawyers and OJ from all those years ago, it kind of seems cartoonish to me. But here I am. Here we are talking about it, and I'm going to watch it and see whether
exactly.
It's worth watching.
I may watch it.
Marcia Clark writes crime fiction now.
Right.
And all crime fiction writers know each other, which is a fundamental truth. So, I'm friendly with her, and it's just kind of weird to see some actress made up to look like her, you know, with her 90s hairdo and stuff. It's just got to feel weird if you're one of the real people who went through that.
I would think. I was just thinking the other day, I'd love to interview Marcia Clark.
Yeah.
Because I know she writes books. I have not read any of them yet.
Yeah.
But
Ron Goldman's father is a really nice guy. He works, he is a suit salesman at Nordstrom in Phoenix.
Really?
And you can walk, if you walk through the Nordstrom, he's still there selling suits, you know. I mean, these are real people, and I think it's kind of weird to drag that case back up again. I mean, I understand. And I assume the motivation is sort of, you know, we're in this time that we're still talking about race in the criminal justice system, and people are following true crime more, you know, with Serial podcast and Making a Murder and stuff like that. I guess that's why they would make it, but it seems weird to me.
It does seem, and it's, we go through these cycles of things that become obsessive, and then, you know, one after the other, and it's like, all right, we've had, like, CSI, I mean, how many CSI shows do there need to be, you know?
Right.
Before we get like, whoa.
And then the Bill Cosby thing is weird because, assuming there's truth even, some of those allegations, you know, I at least think that there is truth there, but it's this weird thing where, at least when most of those cases are old cases, that it's unclear to me that people called that rape back then. You know, and now we see it as such, but that to me is there's so much that's interesting about that case. You already talked about that you think you know somebody, and obviously you don't.
Right.
But it's also just the way social norms have changed over time.
People
fool us.
It's
also just about power, you know, that. Mm-hmm. People in power kind of just being supplied, these women, you know, being driven to his home. You know, it's kind of an amazing story.
But, I mean, he's such a national figure. I mean, everybody knows that name, and it's,
right.
Oh, it's just, it's, so you're working on the next book now, and you're playing lots of golf, and you're so different than I expected you to be for some reason.
And what, you thought it would be dark and brooding and very
serious? Just your picture on the back of the book, you always get an idea what an author is going to be like.
Right.
You look like a fun person. You look like somebody, but I never figured you'd be playing golf. I can't picture you playing golf.
I think there are pictures of me online playing golf if you need proof. But
now, have you ever written a book based around golf, or would you
no,
ever?
No, I haven't. But Samantha Kincaid plays golf, though.
Oh, really?
Cool. One of my early series character played golf, yeah. I don't think you ever actually see her on the golf course, but she talks about going up to the driving range.
Right. So a lot, there is.
Although my reason for playing golf may make it seem less fun and light. So I like to be good at things. Like, I get very frustrated if I'm not good at something, and then I just decide that if I'm not good at it, it must be stupid and not worth doing, so I quit.
That's right.
So, like, I quit 10 different musical instruments as a kid because they're stupid because I can't play them. Like, the French language is stupid because I can't pronounce anything. You know? I don't like to not be good at things. I find it too frustrating. Like, the learning curve is never fast enough for me. Like, if I don't feel progress, I just quit, which is a terrible trait. It's a terrible trait in a person. So golf, I was naturally probably the worst golfer in the world. Like, I would take a lesson and they would try, you know, now that I know how to do it, I know what the natural learning curve is, like what you can expect the person to learn after 1 hour, where they should be at 2 hours. I just got stuck. Like, nothing anyone said to me would change the fact that I was basically like taking a golf club and just hacking it into the ground over and over again. Right. But for whatever reason, I didn't quit. It was the one time where I was like, no, I'm going to learn how to do this, damn it, even if it kills me. And I just, the same summer that I started my first book, I took a whole summer off. Like, I was studying for the New York Bar, so I wasn't really off. But I didn't have a job to go to every day. And I said, if I'm ever going to start that book I want to write, I should start it now. And if I was ever going to learn how to play golf, I should learn now. And so I would work on my book every day, and I would take golf lessons, and I'd go to the driving range, and I'd practice. And I'm very proud of myself that after almost 20 years, I think, I am, like, only slightly poor golfer. I can actually pass as a credible golfer now, so I'm very proud of that.
That is something to be proud of. We all need stuff to be proud of.
That's... Yeah, so it's not. I don't think I enjoy it as relaxation the way a lot of people do. Like, I enjoy it because I'm very competitive with myself. You know, I'm like, I have to do well.
You don't sound like you have a lot of time to read.
I read. I will say the biggest sacrifice I've made in sort of juggling all these jobs is I used to read a lot more. But yeah, I still read. And I read kind of the same kind of books I've always loved. So I definitely read.
It's funny when you talk to authors and they'll say, well, I don't read other people's books. I'm afraid they'll affect the way I write. And I think to myself, wow, that's interesting.
I used to be like that. I would say when I was first kind of getting into treating writing as like, oh, this is my job. I've got to write under deadline. And, you know, will I be able to finish? And still kind of trying to find my voice. I wouldn't read anything that was close at all to my style. But now I don't really worry about that. I know my own voice, and it's different than the people whose books I'm reading.
I would like to recommend a book that you read, and it's published by Harper. It's called What She Knew.
Which is by... I'm bad with titles. I feel like I've read it.
Gilly McMillan.
No, I haven't read it. I have the book.
One of the most fantastic books I've read in the last, I don't know how many years, and I'm absolutely 100% sure it's going to win the Edgar in May. I mean, if it doesn't...
Oh, really?
It should. It is.
I've got it.
It's one of those books that you read and you just get totally wrapped up in.
Okay, so I'm pulling that out of my stack because I do have it.
Oh, my God.
The book I was thinking of, there's another book called What She Left, which I blurbed, actually, which is also a good book. But She Knew is kind of taking off, obviously.
It's an amazing book. I it's one of those books you didn't want to see end.
Okay, I'm putting it higher up on my list.
I'll be anxious to hear what you have to say about it. Now I'm really curious.
Okay.
It's great to recommend books, but you don't always get to hear people's reactions to them after you recommend them, you know?
I know that's, well, you were saying, and it's a reminder that I should probably put together a book club kit for the X, but you said at the very beginning it's the kind of book you would want to read in book club because you almost have to know, you have to read it first to even talk about what it's about and how you feel about the characters. And
right.
You asked before about the reactions to Olivia. I've been surprised by the number of people who say that they hate her, that they see nothing redeemable in her, that she's real, like she's part of the list of unlikable women protagonists right now. I'm like, really? Like, I don't think she's that.
No, not that bad, but there were moments I really...
She does bad things, yeah.
Yeah, she does.
That destructive, though, I think... Well, I don't want to give too much away, but I think you start... If I've done my job, I kind of thought people would understand why she did some of those things, but...
Yeah, I was really, like I said, annoyed with her and shocked by some of the things she had done and was doing.
Right.
But I think after as the book goes along, you kind of understand her more.
Yes, right.
So you grow into understanding. And we're back to that judgmental thing, being judgmental with people again. But I think if you give her a chance, you know, there is something about her that you will like. It's just that you, some of the things that she does, you just can't imagine her doing. That's the shock. And once you get over that shock, I felt.
Is why Charlotte, I think, really doesn't like her.
So are we going to see a book every March from you? Is that the way it looks
I don't
now?
No, because I normally come out in summer. And the reason why this one, I skipped last summer because I was working on the Mary books too. So
right.
My next Ellie book may not be out till next summer, but I'm not sure about that. I've got to finish it first.
So are you working on book three with Mary right now, even as
yeah.
we speak?
Mm-hmm.
That's
yep.
cool. I'm dying to see what it's going to be about. And it's funny because at the end of the second book, she mentions another cold case, and I wonder, is that going to be the next book?
Reading there. You've got a watchful eye. Yeah, we kind of teed that one up. Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. Oh, that must be the next book. And, it's really...
Yes, that's the one we're working on.
What do you like to watch on TV?
Oh, I watch so much TV. I watch Scandal.
You like Scandal?
How to Get Away with Murder.
Why do you laugh
Good
when you say
wife.
Scandal?
I watch these kind of... They're ludicrous. I mean, I don't think it's an insult to those shows to say that they are insane TV shows.
They are.
It's like, I don't want to give everything away, but like everybody on that show is killing everybody else.
I know, it's
if
terrible.
If they're not sleeping with them, they're killing them.
Well, what would shows be like without sex? You wonder sometimes.
And How to Get Away with Murder is even crazier. I like Empire. I mean, I kind of watch these kind of big, crazy TV shows when... I watch them on my iPad when I'm at the gym. It's like my workout.
Yes.
Like instead of a workout playlist, I have like a workout TV show. And then on the more serious end of the spectrum, what are we watching these days? My husband, we like Downton Abbey. We watch that together. Yeah. So.
There's a scene that happened on Sunday night that I can't even get out of my head now. The scene at the dinner table, which was just that.
Yelling at the TV like, oh, no.
And the way they did it so well, I mean, it's amazing how well they do those scenes.
Yeah, that show must cost a fortune to make. You can't even imagine somebody making that show in the United States, I guess. But.
Well, if you read in some of the books, they talk about how long it takes to film one dinner scene. It's like 2 or 3 days to do one dinner scene.
Yeah, I know. It's a beautiful show. So I'm going to miss that when it ends. And my husband likes comedies. So one of our favorite shows, nobody watches it. It's called Blackish.
Oh, yes, yes.
I love Blackish. That's one of my favorite things.
It is an interesting show, what I've seen
of
it.
It's so sweet. It's a very sweet show. I think, you know, right now that everybody's trying to be cynical, and it's just a very nice show. I like it.
So how many hours a week do you spend writing, would you say? Or is it different every week?
It varies. It shouldn't, but it does. Like, when I'm beginning, it's really like pulling teeth because I don't know the characters yet, and oftentimes I don't know the plot yet. But usually to finish a book, the last few years, I'll go away and rent a hotel room.
Oh, really?
And I'll write, you know, I don't want to exaggerate. It's a lot. I will. I'll stop really just to eat dinner and go to the gym. So I'll write from 10 in the morning till 2 in the morning. You know, taking maybe 2 hours of a break. I mean, which is a crazy way to do it. and I'll do that till I'll do that for 2 weeks in a row.
That's interesting. So, if you have a good idea, I would think you'd have to stop and write it down and say, I've got to write this down before I forget it. You know,
I think because I don't outline though. I sometimes I start, like I said, I almost get to know the characters as I write. So sometimes it takes me half the book before I'm like, oh, that's what this book is about, and I've got to go back and fix the first half later. But that's when I kind of pull myself up and write as fast as I can, and then.
Well, the best books are the ones you can't tell have been edited. And that's the same with the movie.
That's what I mean. I do a lot in the editing process in terms of evening things out because, you know, I'll learn things. I think Olivia started out much less complex. I think the first draft, I should go back and look at it. I think in the first draft, Olivia didn't have all those layers to her. I went
back. You don't want her to be sugary sweet either.
I rebuilt her. I don't always have to do that, but I think with the standalones in particular, where I'm kind of trying to getting to know people as I write the book, a lot of it changes in the editing process.
I'm curious what you listen to in music.
I have horrible taste in music. I don't know anything new at all. Like, the only music I know that's new is because you can't avoid it when it's on at the gym, like, you know, Justin Bieber songs and things like that, but I don't listen to that. I listen to 80s pop music. Like, I love English Beat and the Psychedelic Furs and David Bowie. That's not awful music, but I don't listen to anything new. I don't know any of it. You know, I listen to old rap. Love old rap music. I basically listen to the same music I listened to when I was 18 years old.
I love the things they're doing now with James Corden and the late night with the karaoke, the car karaoke thing.
Oh, I know. I love that too. With Stevie Wonder, and Adele, I couldn't stop watching those. So good.
They are. They're just, and he's such a
likable guy. I want to be in the back seat. I'm like, if I could have a bucket list, my bucket list includes like riding in the back seat with him and Adele.
He really, I mean, James Corden is like, he's like an overgrown kid is what he is.
Yeah, he looks so happy. I don't see how, if that might be the cure for depression, is like just put that on an endless replay and watch him sing. Like, he's so happy, which, how could you not be? Like, you're in a car singing with Stevie Wonder. I mean, that's got to be an amazing experience.
And then 45 million hits for the Adele one or something. Some ridiculous amount.
Yeah.
It's like,
well, she's so infectious. I mean, one, you can't believe anyone sounds like that just singing in a car.
Right.
But two, she's hilarious.
Yeah, and the British voice just makes her more interesting.
Yes. I want her to be my best friend. Yeah.
Definitely. Should be working out with her, that's what you should. Well, it's been great to talk to you. This has been
good
a lot
to talk
of,
to you.
It's been a lot of fun. And the new book is, again, it's called The X from Harper. You get it in all your bookstores now. I assume there's an audio version of it.
There is.
Gillian Flynn. Do you know Gillian Flynn?
I have met her. I told you all crime writers know each other. She and I had dinner together.
Really?
Which was arranged for our mutual friend, Karen Slaughter. So I'm telling you, everybody knows everybody. I'm not name-dropping. We all know each other. But she's also a Kansas girl. She went to KU.
Really?
Yeah.
When is she going to have another book? I can't wait for the next book.
She's a very, you know, I'm not saying like we're besties. I've just met her a couple times. But this was after Gone Girl was a huge hit. And that, you know, she was so gracious at dinner. Her husband was there, who's a lawyer, you know. Her mom was there. We talked about Kansas.
That's
so
neat.
Yeah, she's a regular person.
And Karen's a great girl too. Karen's a sweetheart. I love Karen. And she's this bombastic person. You start talking and you realize there's so much more to her than you think there is.
Yeah. But she's also somebody, she writes those really pretty dark books. And then her favorite thing in the world is like silly cat pictures off the internet and cupcakes.
Cupcakes, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, who doesn't love cupcakes, you know? I used to come home from school, my mom would make cupcakes, and I have wonderful memories about that. I mean, we all have memories like that from childhood, don't we?
Oh, I'll tell you a funny. So Karen keeps an apartment in New York that's not far from mine, so we always get together when she's in New York.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah, she and I know each other really well. Yeah, we're friends. But so we went out because she wanted a cupcake. We're walking around in Chelsea, and all our eyes see is cupcakes. So we walk into a place that we think of as a cupcake place in Chelsea, and we're having our cupcakes, and we're giggling, and both of us have a tendency to use profanity if we're comfortable around people. So we're just cussing up a storm, and we see these like scornful looks from these women nearby, and you know, our immediate reaction is screw you, like, we're sitting here in a public place, we can talk however we want. And then I realized that the cupcake place isn't really a cupcake place, it's a children's bookstore.
Oh no.
And there's all these little kids. I'm like, oh, okay, sorry.
Wow.
Yeah, we're horrible people.
I remember, it's funny.
We are bad people. I did feel guilty about that.
I remember we did it when I was helping with the Barnes & Noble doing their events. We had Janet Ivanovich one night, and she was reading from her books, and there was some pretty filthy language. And
right.
And she's sitting in the children's department doing this, and I'm thinking, this is embarrassing. It really, but you don't think about it because you just—it seems normal to you when you—you know—it's like it's profanity every day. I mean, but you don't use profanity in your books, though, very much.
Not much, no, not much.
Interesting that you like that in real life, and not, there's nothing in your books like that.
Well, you know, I wouldn't say. I mean, I have people complain that there's too much profanity even in my
really?
Books. So I don't think there's that much.
I don't even remember any in this book.
Why? Thank you. But, so natural.
But it's been great to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for giving me the time. I appreciate it. I'm glad you enjoyed the book.
And you should. Everybody
may
should
it continue to haunt you for weeks to come.
It will. I'm going to think about it forever because there's a connection. Well, I shouldn't say it. I want to say something, but I better not. Anyway.
And you can turn off the recorder and then say,
yeah, exactly.
I'll be your book club if you need to talk about it.
And once again, the book is The X by Oliver Burke, and we will talk to you next time.
Thank you so much.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.